Hello, church. Hey, before I start, I wanted to introduce my assistant, Tanya. Stand up, Tanya, if you would. And Ramesh, it wasn't just that we was twiddling our fingers, nor was we waiting for your call. I'm sure God had placed that on her mind to get back with you. Yeah, so that's the person that gets back with you. And then we have a couple trainers here I want to introduce. We have a trainer from Florida that's in the prisons of Florida. He's full-time working in the prisons. Can you stand up, Sean? Yeah. And we have another trainer and pastor, Randy. Randy, could you stand? Randy Pipes. Yeah. And David, where's David at? David's been part of Lared forever. David in the back. And our pastor, Nathan. Nathan, yes. Bless you. I miss anybody? Randy Walker. Where's Randy Walker at? Randy Walker. Oh, my pilot. Come here. Well, I've got to really embarrass him good. This is my pilot friend. This is a gift from God. I've been a pilot for about 11 or 12 years, and I stepped up into another plane that God gave me this year. He told me he was going to do it 2 years ago. And in one day, I got a phone call that said, hey, we want to buy your airplane. 2 hours later, I get a company that calls me and says, hey, we got a new jet for sale that we'll give you a great deal on if you buy it today. 2 hours later, I get another phone call that says, hey, you know that money we owed you for 5 years? We're going to pay you on Wednesday. And then God brought me Sven, who's
Thursday.
Thursday, that's right. And he's been with me ever since for about the last, it seems like 6 years, but it's been about a month and a half. Yeah, so Sven, thank you publicly.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bless you. Give him a hand. Yes. Hey, we're going to have fun tonight, all right? Every time I'm able to speak, I always like to say this, and I want you to say it with me. God, give me the words.
No.
You got to say, give Jerry the words. You're listening. I'm talking. Give Jerry the words. And we'll give you the glory. Thank you, God. I'm a business guy. You know, I'm not a pastor. And like my friend said, God wants to use everyone. It's just not the paid ministry. God wants to use all of us for what he's about to do on the earth and what he's doing right now. It's so exciting. We live in such an exciting time. I mean to tell you, it's an exciting time. And our founder, John Schrock, I remember 30 years ago, him telling us about what's going to happen. And the things that he told us 30 years ago are happening today. And you know, when Jesus was here, many of the folks that was living during those times really never knew that he was here. It was a transition time, and it just kind of like went by so many. There was only a few that really knew what was going on at the moment. And I believe we're in that same time right now. There's a transition time that a few of us know what God's doing, and we're connecting to that, and we're watching God do it. It's not what Jerry's doing. It's not what the businessman's doing. It's not what Bernie's doing. It has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with what God's doing on the earth. He's bringing about something that is so big. In the New Testament, wasn't those guys telling us, you know, those guys called disciples that said, hey, in the ending times, it's going to be so exciting. It's so exciting. I remember, I'll tell you how I was introduced to this. I was a business guy. I was in a factory working first. And I wanted out of the factory so bad. And I tried the first business, and it failed. And then I tried my second business, and it failed. Anybody have a business that ever failed? Oh, stand up. Come on. I want to see it. Come on. Stand up. You had a business that failed. And look at their faces. They're still smiling. It's okay, huh? It's okay. The good news is we fall forward, as our friend John Maxwell says, right? Well, I failed in the second business, lost everything. Oh, my goodness, what a year. And nearly lost my family. And my wife and I have been married 42 years. We have 3 children and 7 grandchildren. And, you know, she would have been here tonight, but she was all wore out. We've been staying in a hotel for all summer. Since June 20th, we've been in a hotel, maybe all but 7 days. And finally, I brought her back to Ohio today, and she called me, or I called her just when I landed here, and let her know I was here. And she said, "Oh, honey, I came into the kitchen. I kissed the floor. Oh, it's so great to be home." So nothing personal, but she had some things to do at home. She wanted to be there. But my third business, I begged my wife. I said, "Honey, one more time." And you know she's a great lady when she gives you the approval for one more time. And we were in this business. It was in publishing. And we got a hold of Bernie and John, and they had 5 other partners. And they were in Ohio. I was in California. And after about 3 years, this business that I was really trying, really believing in, was really like this. I mean, it was a slow like this. And I remember Bernie. He was told by our mentor. He said, "Hey, if you want to be wise in life," how many wants to be wise in life? Yeah, come on. "Want to be wise in business, no one understand what King Solomon has to say." And you think about King Solomon's life, you know, he's the wisest man to ever live. Why wouldn't we really know what he had to say then? And so Bernie started reading the book of Proverbs and studying it, and he found that, you know, one verse may speak about money, the next about family, the next about sex. You know, it's like, you know, jumping all over the place. And the business that we were in classified ad papers. We were used to classifying things. You know, like we'd have the Corvettes together and the Fords together and the wash machines in the section. And you know how that works. And so he took the Proverbs book and classified it like you would the newspaper. If you had problems with money, you could go to the money section and go to the index and page 13, and there's all the things that King Solomon said. If you had another problem with family, you'd go to the section of family. If you wanted to build a team, it was right there. So I carried this in my lapel. Every time I ran into a problem, I'd pull it out and see what King Solomon said, and boom, there was the answer. Within about 6 months, I started to see things totally different. I seen my wife differently. I seen my family, my employees, the people I did business with. The things that was so important to me before was not important to like it was today. Things started to change, and things started to happen. Our business went from this to like this. Only God. God gave me a profit margin that was only God could do. And I think he gave that to me at that moment, to show me that, hey, this is not a mistake. This is me speaking to you. I'd like to have those same profit margins today. God's been good to me. We built that business and it grew. And a few years later, a company from France came and bought it. And my wife and I really didn't understand what was happening. And we moved back to Ohio, be closer to Bernie and to John, 2 mentors of mine. 6 months later, they sold their business. And so now the 3 of us are kind of looking at each other like, what's God doing? And we thought, you know what? This is a time to help bring about values and principles to United States businessmen and women. This was in 1989. And John was telling us then, he said, you know, there'll be a time that the most important thing, the thing that all the news will be talking about, all the politicians will be talking about, will be values and principles. And so let's start working in the companies because we could see the need. You know, we were employers. That timing wasn't right. I mean, we knocked on doors. It was like pushing a wagon uphill. And God took us to Guatemala, Mexico, and Panama, and Colombia. And we were working with businesses. And then God took us over to Ukraine, and Russia, and Africa, and Asia. Every place but United States. And we worked with businesses. Now, I'm gonna show you a couple things, because I have an assignment tonight. I want you all to say assignment. That's what I have. I have an assignment. God has given me three words. They're pretty simple words. And he knows how simple I am. I'm a pretty simple guy. He's given me these three words that I know that these words are for me. I've been in different countries, and somebody will come up and say, "Hey, God told me to tell you this." These three words. I had a lady once, I walked in, and I heard this lady go, "Ah!" like really loud, and a few minutes later, we were having prayer up front, and she came up, and she told me, she said, "I was praying for my mother because she was dying on Saturday." And after a few hours, God said, "Quit praying for your mother, pray for this man." And she said, "A man's face came so clear to my mind, and I started to pray for this face. What, God, what should I pray?" And she said, God said, "Don't worry about what pray, just pray." And she said, "When you walked in, your face is what I seen." And she said, "These are the three words that God said. Hope, belief, and inspiration. That's what I'm supposed to do. Three easy words. Bring hope, bring inspiration, and bring belief." So my job tonight, I want you all to say it together. And if you're taking notes, take those notes, because it's very important that you catch it. I'm going to bring hope, belief, and inspiration. Father, help me bring hope, belief, and inspiration on this crowd, not from me, but from you, God, in your precious name, Jesus. Hope, belief, and inspiration is what I've been delivering, what God has been giving through me. Not me, but God. And so tonight I want to give you that it's what God's doing on the earth. Hope, belief, and inspiration. In 1962, am I up here? How do I do this? Let's see. Oh, I am. Okay. In 1962, our founder of Lared was the founder of our church, maybe a year or 2 years before that. I'm not sure the exact dates. A little Amish community. I have to understand the Amish, if you don't know much about them, the Amish are typically eighth grade education. They're horse and buggy. They never have a car. You know, their mindset is, you know, this county, never really to go outside the county. And salvation started to come through this group of Amish. And John was one of those, became the pastor and started this church. And many of the Amish received the Lord and started coming to this church. And on a Sunday morning in 1962, as they were worshiping, a man stopped and came into the church and said, "You know, I was driving through the town here and I felt God saying this. And I'm supposed to come in and tell you these words. This church will be the light for the nations." Now, they'd never seen this man again. Let me see if I can get this going. "You'll be like a city on the hill. You will be the light to the nations." Now, understand, this group of folks, they haven't been out of the county. And yet, they're going to be the hope for the world. They're going to be the lighthouse for the nations. Can you imagine how they would feel about that? But isn't that the way God works? God takes the ones that is the least that you'd think and becomes the one that it is. I mean, think about that church that we heard about around some airport someplace in the United States. It was so small. And then God came and like, boom. Huh? Toronto or someplace. Yeah. Our little church, you know, it was so important to them, they put it in their notes. Understand, they didn't take a lot of notes in those days. And there was not a lot of prophetic people coming through our little burg, especially in 1962. Only God. Well, then, in 1989, I want to give you a vision. John was invited to hear from, have a meeting with several business folks that was in ministry together for years. And they went to St. Louis and they were meeting. They met all day long and they were thinking, okay, how are we going to do this? What kind of ministry, God, are you calling us? We feel something in our spirit. What is it you're calling us for? And they're crying out to hear from God. And so they said, "Hey, let's just break and let's pray that when you go back to your room, pray and maybe God will come and speak to one of us and then we can hear from God." Well, John wasn't really thinking he was going to go back to his room to hear from God. He was just so tired. And he invited his wife, Marie, and he just came back to visit with her a little bit and go to bed. And he went to bed and he woke up in the middle of the night And he heard some voices. And let's take it in here. 1989, John Schrock was invited to a meeting of Christian business professional leaders who were discerning major change that was taking place in the world. After a time of prayer, the group asked the Lord, would he speak during the night? The vision provided the foundation for the ministry of Lared. During the night, he was awakened and was in a semi-sleep condition. I beheld the throne with a crowd of people gathered around, all standing at attention. I recognized the meeting had been held in heaven, and God had sat on the throne, and he said, bring forth the agenda. A large scroll was unrolled and stopped at a place toward the end called Today in Time. God then spoke and said, it is time. This is the vision. I have people of vision, not plagued by former things. They will have insight to my agenda. They will possess valor, fearless, bold, and aggressive. They will look like lions, but have hearts like lambs. These people will attract and find favor with great leaders of our time. I have people of vision, not... Oh, I'm sorry. Got to push the button, Jerry. Whoop. Oh, you know what? That's what this button's for. Wow. Pardon me. You can tell my only job is to give three words, right? God knew not to make it too hard for me. Okay, here we are. My agenda is already understood by many. However, it is understood more by national and political leaders than religious. They will be new breed. Now, let me back up on that line, because I don't want to go past that without speaking into it. When the Lord was here, wasn't the church one of the last ones to really get it? And I think that's not a bad thing. I think a lot of times that the church is one of some of the last ones to go, because if not, everything that would come around, they'd be changing. And so I think there's a safety net there for the church. So this is not negative. Understood by many national and political leaders than religious. They will be a new breed of different spirit, confident and strong, yet gentle. They will be unmovable, strength mixed with gentleness, loving and caring. They will not appear to be super religious or over spiritual. These people will be moved by my agenda. They will walk on the earth with destiny as problem solvers and pace setters, operating wisdom motivated by my agenda and not seeking approval of the former. God then said, the next years will involve many changes. The world kingdom will deteriorate, and there will be a rise of Christianity worldwide. The world will come to Christians for answers. The world will come to Christians for answers. The world will come to Christians for answers. Now, when this, in 1989, remember how that was back there. The church was going through some big problems, you know, at least in the States. It was the Baker, remember Baker and... what's his name? Swaggart. And I mean, the church was, and here God was saying, hey, no. Hey, the world will come to Christians for answers. Well, we took that vision, and, you know, with visions, it's kind of like when someone speaks into my life. Someone told me 2 years ago, God's going to give you a new jet airplane. Well, I didn't go out and buy a new jet airplane the next day. You know, it's like, hey, that's great, but I just let God work it out, all those details. Same way with our vision. You know, we knew about a road to go down, but if it's God, God needed to show us. And I want to tell you, every time that we would take a trip, God would do something supernatural that we knew that this was God. It could only be God. It couldn't be something we would be making up. It could only be God that this was happening. I remember telling my wife, every time we'd go on a trip, we'd go into Colombia or Guatemala or Mexico, and we'd see so many unbelievable things happen. And then coming back in the United States was so difficult. It felt like I was coming into a cloud. You know how you're flying, and it's blue skies, and then you're coming in, and there's those low-hanging clouds above Toronto, and you're coming through, and it's like, oh. That's what I felt coming in the United States. It was like I was coming into this ugliness that was covered over our nation. Well, we knew that it was God. And the Lared, I want to tell you real quick how that name came about. That we were called the International Network for Christians in Business. And one of the very first meetings in Bucaramanga, Colombia, and you'll find that we're not really evangelistic, but we are evangelistic. I mean, it's not like we have a lot of altar calls, but God has brought some altar calls. And this one evening, one of the trainers from Lared, from Colombia, still with us today, one of our trainers, he's a pastor, and he was speaking, and God just moved in the hearts. He was talking about the kingdom. He was talking about what God's about to do. And he asked, does anyone get to know about the king that I just talked about that has the kingdom? And 153 came to know the king. 153. And afterwards, this man came to Bernie, and he was saying, Lared, Lared. And Bernie said, what do you mean, Lared, Lared? He said, well, tonight, you have taught us how to cast the net on the other side of the boat. And we have caught 153 big fish. Political leaders, business leaders. And Bernie went back to his room that night, and he looked up in John, towards the end of John, when Jesus first got into his ministry, one of the first things that was recorded was that when he told the disciples, hey, you guys, catch any fish? Remember that? Cast your nets on the other side. And 153, same number. So that night, that day, we changed our name because we knew it was God. It was a God name, right? It was like, all right, we're Lared. What's it mean? I don't know. It's a God name. I want to tell you about some stuff. All those years, we would go to these countries, and God would do something really neat with us. We'd see things happen with businesses, and business guys were starting to grow. They started to see a different way of doing business, of how to treat their employees, and how to treat each other, and how to treat their families, and we've seen changes in life. But we knew the governments were going to come to us for answers, and we waited like 15 years. You know, we're going all these nations, and we work with 5 people here, and 20 there, and 50 there, and 100 there, and 10 here, and 5 there. And then we got a call from our president of Lared in Colombia. And he said, hey, Jerry, he said, Colombia, the nation, is asking us to train 11,500 employees. All right, that's God, right? Yeah. Okay, tell us about those employees. Well, they're prison guards. Prison guards. Maybe we should call Chuck Colson. Chuck's in prisons. And I really felt God came on me and said, wait a minute, what about Joseph? What about Joseph who went to the prison innocently, ended up running the prison, came out and ran the nation? How many Josephs are in the prisons of Colombia? You know, where you're guilty until you're proven innocent. If you happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, you could be put in prison and be there for 2 or 3 years before you get in front of a judge. Wow. So we started preparing, and we knew that we needed to put something together. It was the truth, but yet we knew we couldn't take Bible verses to the government. And so we started putting together the same words, but just take out the Proverbs 24:10. You know, we found out you can take the Bible verse out, and people still come to get to know God. It's the truth. The truth sets what? Sets you free. And that's what started happening. Well, I remember when we went to Colombia to the prisons. There was so much hate in the prisons of Colombia. Listen, it was 11,500 prison guards from 143 prisons where they housed 75,000 prisoners. At one prison, the month before, the average of 12 killings per day. They had average of killings of every day somewhere in the prisons of Colombia. There was gangs, there was hate, there was prostitution, there was gambling. Can I have one of those waters? Okay. Good, thank you. There was hate, there was gangs, prostitution. These drug lords, when they would get caught, the cartel, they would send their builder in to build a suite inside the prison, serious, before they even get there. It had a door to go and come as they pleased.
They had satellite TV, big screens, computers. Their offices were set up. They were protected inside the prisons. They had so much money, they would pay off everybody in the prison. And if anybody didn't take the money, I remember the very first time that Bernie and I and John went into the meet with the general, the guy that was assigned by President Uribe to change the prisons of Colombia. I remember waiting for him outside, and outside of his office there was these big hangings of photos, colored paintings of all the generals of the past of Colombia, the prisons. And the first man, he might have been in charge like, I don't know, 30 or 40 years, the next guy 20 years, next 40 years, 20 years, 10 years. All the way down, except for the last 10. The last 10 generals were 6 months. 6 months, 6 months, 6 months, or less. And I thought, oh, we got a one-year program, and I got to work with two generals? How's that going to work? And we're going to get started, and the new guy's going to come, and he's going to throw it out. And that's the first question we asked when we went into this meet with the general. He said, oh, no. Why would you ask that 6 months? I said, well, because in the board out there, oh, please forgive me. He said, those men have either been killed or there were so many hits on their life, they had to leave the country. He said, no, you have to understand our problem here. There's so much money inside the prison that they if you don't take the money, they just have you. They had assigned guns to certain prisoners at night so they'd be alive the next morning. I mean, you just can't understand how bad this place was. I remember walking down through the aisles of the prisons, and the general had several people walking with us and to go through the prison. You could feel it. But, you know, the freedom came about through values and principles. I remember the very first day the general had the news there and had all of his right-hand people there. He said, today's a day of history for Colombia. I mean, it's very proper. He said, we're not going to change Colombia prisons with more guns and guards, but with the minds of people through values and principles. And he said, since I am the leader, it starts with me. I need this. Now, you have to understand, a general in the Latin America needs nothing. They don't show any weakness. And for him to say that I need this, wow. And he was the one, here was the man at the top that said, I want to be taught values and principles. I want to learn. I need this. And it rubbed off all the way down. We didn't work with any prisoners. We only worked with the leaders, and the leaders worked with the next group down, the next group. And within 6 months, the prisoners started to write to the government, please, we want to become like the guards. We want what they have. Hey, that's only God's stuff. You can't do that. That's God's stuff. A transformation blew through the prisons of Colombia. And you know, that really confirmed for me. I mean, that gave me so much hope, so much belief that this is a God thing. It's nothing about John Schrock who wrote this thing, took God's principles and I remember him writing these 20 years ago. He's writing these things. You know, these principles, and they were so simple. When you see it tomorrow when Mike trains, you're going to say, really? Wow. And then all of a sudden it starts hitting the heart and hitting the mind because it's so simple. See, if it was hard, yeah, we couldn't do this. But God's made it so simple. That's where the change is coming from. Wow. Prisons of Colombia. So I thought, okay, great. Well, it was a video done on the prisons of Colombia, somehow ended up in the Palace of Guatemala. Department of Justice, they made contact with us and said, listen, we heard what happened in Colombia. Would you meet with us? I remember going to see the director, and the director says, I have this problem. I have 350 national attorneys, and many of them are in corruption. Really? It's a worldwide problem. Just kidding, if there's any attorneys here. They cost me about $200,000 or $300,000 last year, so yeah, attorneys. Okay, anyway, here we go. Many of them are in corruption. They said, you know, what happens here is that when the bad man's caught, the policeman puts him in his car and takes him over to the jail. If he doesn't have any money, then we assign him as a government an attorney. Many cases, this attorney then goes to the home of the parents of this bad guy and says, oh, yeah, your son's in a lot of trouble. But if I had this fee, I could get him out. And if he doesn't get out, oh, let me tell you what's going to happen in the prisons of Guatemala. Well, they come up with the money. He takes the money, bribes a few people at the jail, and the man is released. Now, she said, that's only half the problem. Here's the big problem. Now, the policeman sees him on the street and says, oh, someone took a bribe. I put my life on the line, and then someone took money to get him out in the street, and here he is again. So the next time he catches another bad guy, he puts him in the car. Where do you think he goes? He doesn't go to the jail. He cuts out the middleman. He goes to the house. Mom and Dad, your son's in a lot of trouble. He's in the car. If I had a fee, I could let him out tonight. She said, here's the problem that we have. She said, it's an epidemic that's going on here in Guatemala. She said, many of the people will say, oh, you're a policeman. You got a police uniform, a police car. We're going to tell on you. And so he pulls out his revolver, and he kills everybody in the home. Children, grandchildren, grandparents, whoever's there is now dead. Epidemic, she said. She said, I have no control of the policemen, but I do have control of the attorneys. Could this project work that worked in the prisons of Colombia? We brought the same trainers that worked in the prisons of Colombia. This is God stuff. Brought them in from Colombia, had them trained in the courts of Guatemala, and worked with 350 attorneys. 4 months later, I receive a phone call from this director. Said, Jerry, can you come next Tuesday? I said, yes, of course. So I go back, and it's a celebration. She has 40 attorneys there after 4 months. And one by one, they stand up and they tell how their life has changed. How their wives had new husbands. How their children had new papas. And how their neighbors had new neighbors. And how they became a new person. Only God. From the prisons of one nation to the palace of another nation. That gave us so much belief and hope and inspiration that we knew that we were on something, right? I mean, when you see that, you see the change. 2 months later, I'm in Guatemala again, speaking in a big convention. And afterwards, a man came to me and said, we have to talk. He brought me his card, and it was a Supreme Court judge, one of 13, just like our system in the United States, where they have 13 Supreme Court judges. And I went to his office the next day, and he said, this, what you're doing is unfair. I said, unfair? He said, oh, yeah. He said, we're seeing such a change in the courts here in Guatemala with these attorneys. They're bringing the bad guy to the courtroom and having him tell in detail of what they did wrong. Well, you have to understand, we've never seen the truth in Guatemala. She said, then they'll turn to the audience and they'll look into the eyes of the people that they offended and ask for forgiveness. And then they'll look in the eyes of the judge and ask for forgiveness of the courtroom for them being here. And our judges are the ones making the decisions of their sentences, and they're thinking, wait a minute, this guy is, he's reformed. That's what we sent him to prison for. Let's give him a small sentence or no sentence. Put him on probation. And the Supreme Court judge said, you have to understand something. We all need this here. And so the next few months, we would go back and meet with a different judge, a different judge, a different judge. And in May of 2007, I was able to meet with 11 of the 13 judges. God moved in a room that you could tell it's God. July of 2007, we're sitting in front of the Supreme Court, Guatemala. President of the Supreme Court is here, 11 of his peers, 200 in the audience, cameras are rolling. And the Supreme Court president says these words, today is a day of history for Guatemala. Today we're not going to change this nation with more policemen on the street, but with the minds of people through values and principles. And since I'm over the justice system, it starts with me. I mean, it was like the same speech. See, that's God. For the next year and a half, we brought the same team that worked in the prisons in Colombia, the same worked with the attorneys, and now they're working from the judges down. 7,200 in the justice system. Now listen, that nation spent millions to make that happen. I figured somewhere around $4 million. Because it's 1 hour a week for a year and a half in their case. And these judges, you know, judges have they have assignments of a calendar of this is the day they're going to be in the courtroom, this time, and this. And they had to reschedule all those judges that every Thursday that he was open to be in a round table in small groups. And every Wednesday for them, and every Tuesday. And I mean, we've seen God do God things. It left there, and it was only a month later, and we received a call from Colombia again. It was Admiral Roman of the Colombian Navy. And he said, we have to meet. He said, can you be here next week? My president has asked me, President Uribe has asked me to change the military, to give them a new respect. He said, I went to the prisons here and I seen with my own eyes what happened. I watched a video to see what happened in Guatemala Supreme Court. I have a meeting set up with next week with generals, if you would come. We went, we met with about 450 generals, high brass. It was Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, National and Federal Police. And in this meeting, it was a big auditorium of brass. I mean, everybody had, like, stuff, iron all over them, brass stuff, you know, and stars. And I could feel God in this room, just like with this, just like with John Cena in 1989, 20 years ago, where God said, I have people prepared, that they are not over-religious. I'm looking at 450. They're not very prepared. They're not really religious, but they're hungry because what they have is not working. So they're asking the Christians for the answers. Yeah. Thank you, God. We met. Oh, my goodness. What a meeting. I mean, God, give me the words. Remember my prayer I prayed? I always pray that prayer. Because, hey, I can't deliver. I have to expect God to give me the words. God tells us in John that when He sends you to world leaders, He will give you the words at the time that you need them. And that's what God has given us. Every time He gives us the words, and He gives us so much favor. You just feel the spirit of favor because you're doing what God has called you to do. I remember speaking to those 450 staff members, and afterwards, Jesus, the president of Colombia, Lared, he spoke. I mean, it felt so good. You could just feel God in this room. It was like a church service with all this military. And then there was a man in the back that stood up, a man in blue, three stripes. Got his little hat on, takes his hat off. I'm thinking, oh no, he's going to mess it up. He's got his own program. That's the enemy coming, you know. Oh, we've seen that. If I have time, I'll share those stories with you. Because you have to know that the enemy doesn't like what we're doing. But here comes this man. He was an Air Force, I knew, with the colors. He comes up to the podium, stands straight up. He said, what these men have said, here it goes, is true. Yes, God. He said 3 years ago, a businessman, how many business people do we have here tonight? Okay, a businessman invited me to a round table. I thought it was a religious thing, so I chose not to go. He said, the next week I got another call from another businessman, said, no, you need to come. He said, so I decided to go one time to make him happy. I went, and they talked about a principle called attitude. I thought, ooh, attitude. He told me later, he said, you know, Jerry, attitude? I realized in that meeting that attitude is so important. It's important to my household. Because it is the environment for the generations to come in my family. Think of it. The environment that you're creating, your attitude in your household today, is the attitude that you're creating for the generation to come that's following you, that's living in your household. That's pretty sharp for him to pick up. He said, then I got scared and I thought, oh, what am I creating at the Air Force base? Because I'm the general. My attitude on base is the environment that I'm creating for everybody to act like. He said, I went back the second week, the third week, the fourth week. I said, this is so good, I got to take it to my men. They said, hey, it's free. Free? It's on the internet. He said, I ran it out of the internet, took it back to my base, got my officers involved. They loved it so much, they said, let's take it to the entire base. He said, let me give you the facts. Now, here we come with the general. This is why he's got the stars, right? Here's the facts. The facts is that I reduced my disciplinary actions by 91% with my cadets and 85% with my soldiers. Whoa! Every general in this place is like, whoa! Only God does that stuff. That meeting went so well. We got done with that meeting, and the admiral said to me, he said, can you be here next week? Well, yeah. So the next week, I'm there again. This time, he has 650 in this auditorium. Same thing. The general of the Air Force, he shows up again, gives the same message. After that meeting, can you be here next week? Well, yeah. 3 weeks in a row, we've seen a total of 1,650 top leaders of the Colombian military. I remember walking down the corridor after the last meeting, admiral on one side, general of the army on this side, and I'm saying, who's going to take this? And they both stopped and they look at me and they said, it is done. I said, "What is done? What does it mean? And done, it's done. I said, well, all the military, 400,000. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, everybody. It's an order of President Uribe. Only God does that stuff. Yes, God, thank you. Last year, we trained 165,000 military soldiers from this every city, jungles of Colombia. You guys know what Skype, you know, like over your computer, you get the picture and stuff. I got a Skype one evening. It was late at night, and it was the president of LARED, Colombia. He's in the jungles in the back country of Colombia, where they had the guerrillas fighting and all that stuff going on. I remember meeting with the Minister of Defense like 2 years before we started doing this project. And Minister of Defense said, hey, as much as I like your project, do you understand that I'm in a war? We can't stop every week and do values and principles. Are you kidding me? We're fighting a war here. Jesus, he was in that meeting. So Jesus from the jungles of Colombia where they're fighting those wars. He said, Jerry, you know where I'm at? I said, no, where are you at? He said, I'm in the jungles of Colombia. He said, you remember what that minister of defense said that that'll never happen? They're stopping every week 1 hour and they're doing principles. he said today was so interesting. He said, last night, he said, we were closing out the meeting and this one guy said, hey, I got something to say. He said, you know, I have to ask everybody for forgiveness. He said, my wife and I, we've been separated for some time, and I've been in this relationship with this other woman, and it's the wrong thing to do. I owe you all an apology. Please forgive me. I'm going to see my wife tonight. I'm going to be honest with her and tell her everything that's happened, and so think of me tonight. A few minutes later, this lady stands up. Jesus said, I'm the lady that... that he was saying, talking about, please forgive me. He comes in the next morning with his wife. And they were both celebrating. Said, oh, we have a new life. We have a new honesty between us, a new relationship. They were so happy. After they were through, Jesus said, Jerry, another man stood up and asked for forgiveness that he was doing the same thing. Another man stood up. He said it was going like three or four deep doing this. He said, the general came over that's in charge of this and said, what are you doing to my army? Oh, God, you're so good. Yes, God. It left Colombia, went into Mexico, where President Calderon, Mexican president, incredible man. I know we're hearing a lot of bad stuff about him. I believe he's a good man. I believe that... I know at that position, they get hit a lot. But from what I've seen, the several meetings I had with he and his wife, they are about bringing about a changed Mexico. And we was working with his police there. We're working in all the prisons of Colombia. I mean, in Mexico. Mike's been there training for 2 years, I guess. And we really believe and hope in there's so much corruption going on in Mexico. Okay, I got to end it up here because of time, but I want to do this with you. Keep going? Really? We're okay? Keep it going. Oh, we go to 10. Okay. They told me it was 6-hour meetings you guys used to have. I thought, well, I only need 4. Okay, good. Mexico has been going, when we were in Mexico, we've seen some incredible things. First of all, you have to understand Mexico. I think Mexico is in so much trouble because of the United States. Colombia is so much in trouble because of the United States. It's our drugs. The drugs that we use, in like 20 years ago, we used $35 billion worth of drugs. Did I get that right, Bernie? 35. Today, it's $70 billion. If we could just get rid of our own drug use, we could stop the bloodshed in these nations. These nations, in the United States, as much as I love the country, and it's still, in my opinion, because it's my home, it's one of the greatest nations. Our nation was built with values and principles. And let's go to... I want to take you someplace. I want to take you over to... I want to take you to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28. I want to take you back to something that John showed me some time ago. Now, this is Moses speaking to the second generation. The first generation, let's talk about the first generation. First generation, remember those guys? 2 million of them, right? Remember the story? I mean, that story really hits home with me, that those 2 million people, Moses comes to, remember, you get it, there's so many of us that are Moseses, where God is coming and saying, hey, I want you to do this. You can do it. And Moses said, oh, I can't do that. I don't have the words. I stutter. Are you kidding me? To go to the king and talk to the king? Go to the mayor and talk to the mayor? Go to the police chief and talk to the police chief? I got to come to your story, Randy. Go to the sheriff and talk to the sheriff? Are you kidding me, God? And God said to Moses, hey, you can do it. Okay, you can take your brother-in-law with you, right? Goes to the king. I want to release the people, 2 million people. Understand what that meant to the king. I mean, that was his labor force. He's taking all of his labor force out. But you know what really shows me is that any time God could have changed the king's heart like that. God could have changed the king's heart at any moment. But he didn't. He let him go through, how many plagues? 10 plagues. Can you imagine that? Why did he do that? I questioned that for a long time. God, why did you do those 10 plagues? I mean, there was the firstborn killed, then there was the grasshoppers and the frogs and the blood and all those things. You'd think after about the third one, the king would say, okay, I get it. And then he gives him his gold and silver. And then he releases the people finally. Hey, get out of here. Please, go. And they get down by the sea. And now he's waiting. God said, hold up here. They didn't open up the sea yet. They're waiting on this side. Well, why would he wait? And it's like, let's get on with it, man, before they change their mind. God had him camping out there. And then he changed the king's heart. I think the king woke up and said, whoa, I give away my gold. Forget the people, I get the gold. So he takes off with his best chariots, right? Goes down to the sea. Then God opened the sea up. And the people are going through the sea. Can you imagine how that would have looked? Oh my goodness, this is a great avenue. I mean, can you imagine? It was this wide and the wall of water is like, wow, look at that fish. It had to be the biggest aquarium. Think of that. Think of the belief, the hope, and inspiration you would have had to walk through an aquarium like that. To see 10 plagues happen. How much hope and belief would you have? Lots. You'd think. But only 2 million. Only 2 million people. And out of the 2 million, only 2. Why? You know, after they got through the sea, then God, you know, he fed them from heaven. And then he gave them water from the rocks. And then they whined. Remember? Oh, this tastes terrible. Moses, what are you doing? We're better off slaves. Oh, this water is sour. Oh, I got to go to school today. Oh, I got to work. I got to go to work tomorrow. Oh, honey, I don't want to take a trash out now. It's what they call whining with an attitude, right? My friend, John Maxwell, if you ever grab a hold of one of his Bibles, you know how he opens up and he shares leadership principles. And if you look at that chapter, he said there's one principle that cost 2 million people the promised land. And you know, I think that principle hurts so many of us today. It's the same principle. It's the principle of attitude. Our attitude means so much. So much to God. So much to our spouse. So much to our household. So much to the church. So much what God wants to do in our lives. Here was 2 million people that whined about the problems they had rather than seeing the good things that God had store for them. And when they sent, you know, then God says, okay, take 12 of the best. Take 12 of the tribes, one of each tribe, and go. Go up there and look at it and plant it out. And they come back with grapes. Remember the grapes? It took 2 men to carry 1 pot of grapes. How big was those things? 2 men carry 1 pot? I mean, to see the 10 plagues, then to see the sea part, and then to get fed from heaven, you have to think all this is God. And you'd pretty soon be saying, only God. Only God can change the prisons of Colombia. Only God could change the Supreme Court. Only God could do the military of Colombia. Only God can change Toronto. Only God can change the United States. That's what we have to have the attitude for. We had to believe just like they believed. 2 of them anyway. Joshua and Caleb, right? Why did they see it? They went through the same thing. They were the only 2 guys that got to go. I mean, Moses got to see it from a distance, if I remember the story right. But these 2 guys got to go. But God wanted to give it to everybody. I believe we're in the same position right now. God wants to give it to all of us. Now, okay, here we are. Check it out. Got 2 million people. We got 2 that got to go, right? A generation has to die off. We don't want to die off, right? We want to get this thing done. Nobody's done it yet. We're going to do it. Yeah. Here we go. I got my button. Hope, belief, and inspiration. Moses. All right. Whoops. I don't want to go there. It's not there. Okay. Moses. Deuteronomy 28. There we go. That's where I was at. Wrong box. Deuteronomy 28:1. I remember when John Schrock, our founder, first showed this to me. And every time we'd get together, he'd talk about it. And I never really got to see the inside of it until just a couple years ago. And then when I got a hold of it, it was like, wow, here's Moses talking to the second generation. First generation died off. Now, tonight, I'm talking to the second generation. Okay? Tonight's the second generation, and I'm saying to the church, this is here. This is what Moses is saying to us. Moses is saying to this here right here. He's saying, hey, whoops. He said, don't push that button, or you're going to lose your thing. Okay, Deuteronomy 28. There it is. If you listen obediently to the voice of God, your God, and heartily obey all his commandments that I command you today, God your God will place you on high, high above all the nations of the world. All these blessings will come down on you and spread out beyond you because you have responded to the voice of God, our God. Goes on to say that God blesses you in the city. God blesses you in the country. God blesses your hands, things that you touch. God, now, you know, a lot of people, when they hear this message, oh, that's a prosperity message. No, it's what God said. I think our problems in the United States, that we were blessed as a nation because we did these things. When you do these things, then you set up a blessing to be received from God. Things go right. Just about fell. That would have been wrong. We do these things happen. It's not about a prosperity, it's about what God said. God said, if you do these things happen. You'll be blessed in the city, you'll be blessed in the country. I'll make you the head and not the tail. I'll make you the lender and not the borrower. Our nation, I can't speak for Canada. I'm like one of those poor Americans that never knows anything about Canada, and you guys know everything about the United States. Isn't that the truth? Canada, it's like, I learned to speak Canadian, though. No, I did. When I sold my business, I went to Vancouver, into Edmonton. I worked for a newspaper up there. I was consulting. And the first day, I was very good at what I did. God just poured his blessing out on me. And I went out the first day to make sales. I was talking to car dealers, and I was trying to build this guy's newspaper for him. And I looked at his product and knew what could happen here. I mean, I'd seen so much. He said, I'll tell you what. I'll give you 10% of whatever you increase my paper for the next 3 years. Really? Okay. I went there the first day. I went and knocked on doors to car dealers, and they were so nice. Oh. Where are you from? What part of the United States are you from? Oh, it's good that you come. How long are you going to be here for? Hey, thanks for coming in. I didn't make one sale all day. I remember going home. My friend said, hey, how'd it go today? It's gone okay. But I went back to my room. Oh, God. And I tried to think, what's wrong here? I need to learn to speak Canadian. So the next day I went back and said, good morning, beautiful day, eh? My name's Jerry, eh? I learned Canadian like that. One of the easiest languages to learn. They were all my friends. They never asked again about the United States. I sold up a storm. The guy paid me a lot of money. Thank you, God. United States was built on these things. Our forefathers knew God's word. Recently, I was listening to Bernie talk, and he's a historian, a brilliant mind, and he was talking to me about the leaders in the early days of our nation. When we went into one of our wars with England, that you know who was the ones that was really the spokesperson in our country was the pastors. The pastors were the ones that said, we have to do this. This is what's right. This nation needs to do this because it's what God would want. It's not about the king. It's about our king. And our nation was forefounded on those values and principles out of God's word. A lot of those pastors were killed. They were took out and hung, tarred, all those sad things. But it was our pastors of our nation. It was the church. And I'm looking forward to that again, to where the church brings about God's kingdom. Yes. Our nation was built on this, and we became the head. The United States had a good name at one time. I mean, I remember just 20 years ago traveling, and I'd go to a nation, and they'd say, where are you from? I'd say, United States. Oh, United States, here, please sit down here, talk to us, and let me touch you, and just kidding. But today, it's like, if I'm traveling with one of my Colombian friends, and we're to another nation, different than U.S. and different than Colombia, it used to be, 20 years ago, they would spend all their time talking to the person from the U.S. Today, they're spending the time talking to the Colombian. We have lost being the head. We're now the tail. We, at one time, was the lender. We have become the borrower. Something like, what, $13, $14, $15 trillion in climbing? Isn't it amazing that when you apply what God says, that things work? When you do these things. Tomorrow, Mike's going to talk about these things. He's going to give you a roadmap that after 4 weeks, you're going to be just, oh, this is simple. I remember I was working in the school system in Florida. It was at a large West Palm school district, $1 billion budget. And the board of superintendent said to me, I'd like to take 8 of our principals and put them in a round table together. Principals of high schools. Would you meet with them? Sure. I remember the first meeting, and I showed a video of the prisons. Maybe you'll get to see that today, tomorrow, or something. That'd be nice to show. If not, you can go online. Mike will give it to you tomorrow. I showed the video and passed out a booklet. And this little booklet had the principles, had 10 of the principles, and one of the principles is restraint. Restraints is controlling the tongue. And this one lady said, excuse me. I said, yes. Can I say something? Yes, go ahead. She said, this principle, restraint, somebody made a photocopy of it and laid it on my desk 60 days ago. She said, restraint, control your tongue. I called my secretary in. Hey, come in here. Did you put this on my desk? No, I didn't put it. Who put it on my desk? Control your tongue. I don't know. No phone numbers, no emails, no nothing, just this principle. She said, it just made me mad. She said, I read it. I took my pen, I underlined some things. She said, that afternoon, I remember reading it again. I took it home and I read it again. She's got to tell you, the last 30 days has been the best 30 days of my marriage after 31 years. She said, my husband started to change in front of my eyes. He started to open up my car door, and he bought me flowers. She said, he started buying me clothes. She said, they were ugly, but I wasn't going to tell him. She said, I was wondering, why is he changing? And she then I recognized, he didn't change. I changed. I was controlling my tongue. Wow. Yes, God. Whew. You know, we all have those principles. And you'll find over the next 40 weeks, as you go through this, there'll be something that'll just hit you. It's like, oh, that hurt. That'll make a mark. Yeah. See, that's what Moses was doing with his second generation now. He said, if we do these things, then this will happen. If we do these things, let's go into one more thing, and then I'm going to close. I want you to go to Isaiah 61. Isaiah 61. And we'll start at 1. The Spirit of God, the Master, is on. This church is called the Catch the Fire. The Spirit of God, the Master, is on Catch a Fire. He sent Catch a Fire to preach the good news to the poor, to heal the brokenhearted, to announce freedom to all captives, to pardon all prisoners. God sent Spirit of Fire, Catch the Fire. I told you I got three easy words. God sent me to announce the year of His grace, a celebration of God's destruction of our enemies, and to comfort all who mourn, to care for the needs of all who mourn in Zion, to give them bouquet of roses instead of ashes, messages of joy instead of news of doom, a praising heart instead of a liquid spirit, rename them oaks of righteous planted by God to display His glory. They'll rebuild Toronto. They'll raise Toronto out of the wreckage. They'll start over on the ruined city of Toronto and take the rubble left behind and make it new. They'll hire outsiders to herd your flocks, foreigners to work your fields, but you'll have the title Priest of God, honored by His ministries of our God. You'll feast on the bounty of our nation and bask in God's glory. I really believe that, like John said when we first met in Florida, that it wasn't just we ran into each other. I mean, I heard about John. I heard about this church for so many years. And for me to run into him that day was not that I just ran into him. I felt something in God's spirit that I knew that there's something here that, you know, God was doing. And then for John and Pastor Steve and Ramesh coming down and being part of all coming down at one time and meeting with us. And I was humbled because I know where this church has been and where you're going and the great leaders that you have. But then I recognized of how God is taking us to another level. You have experienced something that very few in this planet have experienced. And yet, God wants to do something much even greater than that. See, in the past, and I can only speak for me, and hear my heart, and I hope I don't offend, because it's not meaning to. It's sometimes we get sucked in to that it's all about God doing for us. And I think He really wants to be here all the time with us. I think we hold ourselves back from Him being here all the time because we don't change. The church, and I'm not just speaking of this church, the church today has as many problems as the world has. The church has bankruptcy in the church body. They have money problems. They have children problems. They have drug problems. They have problems, just like the world does. Divorce is nearly the same. And so you got to think, wow, how does the Father feel about that? When He's given us these things, and He wants to do so much with us, He wants to change the nations, and He's going to use you and I. He's not going to use President Obama. It's not going to be one man that's going to change the United States. That's so misleading to even think that one guy is the guy. It's us as a body. It's when we really get our arms around, like what Moses was saying to the second generation. He's saying, hey guys, if we just do these things. Now, I said I wanted to talk about Randy a moment. Randy is a retired, I may miss a few of these things, but Randy helped me. Let me make it up. Retired sheriff, something like that, and been working in the prisons in Alabama. And I was in Alabama at a large church there with John Maxwell. Matter of fact, many of you know John? Do you remember the story of when somebody gave him a gun? Anybody know that story? Some of you know this story? Okay, I was the guy that gave him the gun. Yeah. John, somebody, we were at a big church service there in Alabama, and some guy come up to me and said, hey, would you give John this present? He's always traveling. His wife needs a small handgun. Okay. So we're in my plane. So John comes out to the plane and says, "Hey, John, this guy gives you this gun." "Really? I never owned a gun before." So my co-pilot says to him, "John, you know how to use the gun?" "No." "Well, here's how it works. You got 10 bullets in the clip. Put the clip right in here. Click. And then if you want to put one in the chamber, you go like this. But don't do that. Just leave them in here." "Okay." So John throws it in his briefcase. A couple days later, he goes to the airport there in West Palm Beach. Throws his briefcase up on the security. Thing stops. "Oh, I got a gun in there." "Mr. Maxwell, come with us." Click. If you ever hear his story, he does a story. He put up a picture at church. He and I go to the same church. He put a picture up in the church, and it was 2 weeks before this, he was on the front page of Success Magazine. He shows the next picture. It's his mugshot. He said, "I went from the penthouse to the outhouse. 2 weeks." But he was showing that we could all make mistakes. It was a stupid mistake. He blames me for it. No, he doesn't. He's a good man. Anyway, God wants to do it with us. He's not going to let one man do this thing. We're going to turn around cities. We're going to change nations. It's going to be you and I. We have to make a decision to say, "Hey, I want to participate in that." That's all. It's not supernatural or super religious thing. You don't have to get hit over the head with it. It's like, "Hey, I want to do this. How, okay, God, what do I do? Okay, here's what we're going to do." Tomorrow, Mike's going to talk about what's going to happen over the next 10 weeks. He's got about a four-hour training or better. And he's going to talk about how this is going to change not only your life, but I remember when Mike went to train in Mexico City, a church of a few thousand people, 10,000 maybe, big church in Mexico City, for Mexico. And the whole body got a hold of it. And the body got a hold of it because it wasn't a super religious thing that they were going to do. They were just, they really was going to change, like, "Oh, Randy, I need to come back to you. Values, principles, belief, hope, inspiration. There we go. Randy." This church decided to take these values and principles to all the workplace, to every place that they worked, every place that they go to school, every place their relatives, their friends. They were going to change their communities, not with religion, but with values and principles. And God blew into this. So, like, for instance, if it was me and it was my household, I would go to my friends, relatives, people that I couldn't get to come to church. And I'd say, "Hey, listen, I don't know about you, but things in life are too hard right now. I need to make some changes in values and principles. Come over to the house. We're going to do these for 10 weeks. So 10 weeks is not too long. You could all sign up for 10 weeks. And we're going to talk about principles like hard work and dependability and responsibility. You may not want to even tell them because a lot of times people get a hold of these and say, "Oh, that hurts." You know, like controlling your tongue. Yeah. What this church did is that it grew so big that they had to have 4 weeks of Sunday school, and the Sunday school classes were to teach how to support a round table, how to be a facilitator. And it just kept on growing and growing, and people that would come to these meetings say, "Wait a minute, this stuff is so good. Where'd you get this at?" "I got it from my church." "Oh, wow, I think I'll go to your church. This is good." Because lives started to change, things started to happen. I started to talk about Randy. I'm sorry, I lost my mind there for a minute. Randy, I met him through this church, and he was in the prisons. He took Lored's stuff back to the prisons where he's been working for. How long have you been in the prisons, Randy? Not really, Lored. 16 years. So you've been in the prison ministry for 16 years. He took Lored about a year ago, or probably. Is that right? Okay, a few months. And then he brought his warden to this meeting last week, 2 weeks ago. His warden was so moved on the change that she's seen in the prisons of Alabama. We had the meeting with the sheriff's department, with the sheriff, and he brought a few of his right-hand guys. A friend of mine invited the police chief of the city, and he came to the meeting. So it was the sheriff, it was the police sheriff, police director, and then also the warden. And they all sat around this room and said, you know, the things that we're doing now is not working. We need this in the workplace. People are not responsible today. How many have a job? Do you find that everybody you're working with has responsibility? Are they dependable? Do they work hard? Do they have a good attitude? Oh, I got a product for you. And so we met last week, and at that meeting, the sheriff made a decision, hey, I've got 700 or 800 officers we need to train ASAP. And the police chief said, we need to start working on this too. They're going to try to do it together. That'd be close to 1,700 police officers in his city, Birmingham, Alabama. I know we can do the same thing here. But it's going to take you and I. We all have to step up. So I want to bring, is it John or Steve's going to come up? Which one of you guys is going to come up and pray with us? Because I think we need to pray, don't you think? I'd like to pray. And Mike, wouldn't you come? How many want to be part of, used of this thing? Got it? Okay. How do you want to handle this? Mike, you have a feeling here? I'd like to turn it over to a pastor. I'm a business guy.